Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Back here on Thurby Day at Churchill Downs, this little guy kind of like acting like Matthew before the show starts.
That's what our producer Steven has to do before
yes.
every show.
Grab a hold
he has
of you.
To grab a hold of me. Wrangle me in.
Yes. Get on the desk.
Yeah. Put a muzzle on my. Put a muzzle on my mouth.
And then when the show starts, it's really like letting you out of the gate. You don't know where you're going to run, how fast you're going to go, but
True.
We're going to get to the end.
I am a real mutter.
It's a mixture of that horse and Anthony Hopkins in Silence of the Lambs, basically.
Yeah. Very nice, Jay.
Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry, served by Applebee's.
Welcome to the Fantasy Football Happy Hour. I'm Connor Rogers alongside Matthew Berry, Jay Croucher, fellas, back from Kentucky, Matthew.
That's right.
You're number two for you.
A real butter.
You're number two.
A real
it was great. I have to tell you that if you've never been, it is really, it's a spectacle. It is one of the all-time great sporting events. There is a real Southern hospitality there. There is something really nice about everyone sort of dressing up, and you know, there's kind of a genteel feeling to getting hammered, and it's like it's great. And so it's become a whole thing because we got out there on Wednesday to do our show on Thursday, but Thursday is also Thurby, which used to be kind of like for the locals, and now it's become a whole thing. There was almost 60,000 people there on Thursday, and then of course the Oaks on Friday. My wife came out as well. And so we were there. I did some stuff on Friday, which we'll talk about in a second. And then we were there for the Oaks. And then, of course, the Derby on Saturday, which was just, you know, magical. And what an amazing finish as well, Jay.
Yes. Quite a surprise, the end there. But it's a very sweaty event, is the
sweaty.
One thing. That's the only downside of Churchill Downs. But how was your mint julep consumption? What was the over-under?
You know what? It was fine. I'm not a mint julep guy.
It's very bourbon-y.
Yeah, it's very bourbon-y. I'm not a bourbon guy.
You're a Dollarita man.
I'm a Dollarita man. Everyone it's knows well that. Done. I am a Margarita man. We went out, myself, producer Damian, and producer Steven went out Wednesday night. You guys were stuck on a plane. And Steven had himself a flight of top shelf bourbon.
A flight?
Yes, he had a whole flight. So it was, if you are a bourbon guy, obviously Kentucky is the place to be. I am not a bourbon guy per se. Listen, many margaritas were consumed. I wish they were Dollaritas. They were not Dollaritas. But it was great. We had an absolute great time. What's amazing about the Kentucky Derby is, and I had a big day on Friday. Shout out to Drew Dinsick. No, our buddy from Bet the Edge, the real reason to listen to Bet the Edge.
Yes.
Drew Dinsick, as he's known, the good part of Bet the
yes.
Edge.
I'm merely Ringo Starr.
Yeah, he's pretty much.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, Drew gave me some good horses on Friday, and so we were up big. I think I broke even on Saturday. But what I found is that, like, I just go to Drew, because Drew knows what he's talking about, right? But everyone's got an opinion. Everyone's just like, I love the six and the fourth, and, you know, so everyone's got an opinion, and I decided, I thought to myself, me and producer Steven, like, I wonder how people are very confident, but often wrong, when it comes to their horse knowledge at the Kentucky Derby. So Steven and I went out, and we talked to some people. Take a look at this. Hey, it's Matthew Berry. I know what you're wondering. What's a football guy doing at Churchill Downs? Well, this weekend on NBC, of course, is the 150th running of the Kentucky Derby. And I look around, I see so many people. They're all dressed fancy. They've all got expensive boxes. They're spending a lot of money to come here. And when you talk to them, they all have a strong opinion. They all know their horses, or so they claim. So I thought I'd take some of my knowledge, football player nicknames, and see if they can identify which is a football player nickname and which is the name of a horse that's actually running on Saturday.
All right, beast mode.
Horse.
It's a football player. That's Marshawn Lynch. Let's start with this one. Pure force.
Nickname.
Of an NFL player or
NFL.
A horse? NFL. No, it's a horse.
Oh, no.
Baby Gundon.
Baby Gundon. That's an NFL player.
That is a horse running on Saturday.
Sweetness.
Horse.
That is a football player.
Of course it is.
All right. All right, the Nigerian Nightmare.
Horse.
That is a football player.
Really?
Bad Beat Brian.
I'm going to go with the player.
That is a horse,
my
too,
goodness,
as well.
I don't know the horses.
What about Ironhead?
That's a horse.
That is a player.
Oh.
Craig Hayward. Everyone
oh,
that.
No, that was bad.
Come on. Sweetness.
Nickname.
Of an NFL player?
Yes.
All right, you are correct. Good job. The Nigerian Nightmare.
NFL player.
Also an NFL player. Well done. We might have a ringer in here. He hate me.
That's got to be a horse.
That is a football player.
Oh, no, they're all killing me now.
Close.
They're killing me now.
Look at
it. No, I'm
all right, two more. Let's see if she can go. She's unbelievable. She's undefeated. Ironhead.
Ooh, NFL player.
That is an NFL player as well. Let's see. Honey Badger.
NFL player.
You crush it all.
Well, I forgot to mention I do have a fantasy team. I
look
like
at
my
you. Oh, my God. What's the fantasy team name?
Jamarvelous. Got Jamar Chase in the third round.
Hey, oh, well.
The third pick of the first round.
There you go. I mean, we got Jamar.
Performance there at the end. Yeah.
She got, like, we obviously edited that down. She literally got, like, 15 in a row. It was unbelievable. What was great is the guy that got He Hate Me wrong, that was his entire fantasy football dynasty league that was sitting there watching me interview him, and all they did was just give him endless amounts of crap.
He panicked on camera.
He panicked on camera a little bit, but oh, yeah, yeah. And she clarified, by the way, people always like, how'd you get Jamar Chase in the third round? I think she panicked a little bit. She got it at the third pick is what she did. She got so Jamarvelous, but yeah, she literally went 15 for 15 on all names.
I like that you dressed up for the digital bit for NBC.
Right.
No suit for us on our television
yeah,
show.
What am I, Jay Croucher, like showing up here? Like, I don't have any Golf Channel work doing going after the show. But anyway, it was, tis the season. Looked good. It was a lot of fun, and appreciate everyone in their drunken state coming on camera with us.
Yeah, well, they performed like
horribly,
quite terrible.
Horribly, you know. And I was.
He Hate Me is a tough one.
I think that's an easy one.
I agree. It's hard to get that wrong.
Right. That's why like the entire league, the entire league of that guy, and most people got He Hate Me wrong. But the entire league was like, "Are you kidding me?" Like XFL, you know, everything like that, and so.
Great camera work, by the way. They pan over to his buddies, and they're just like, "Oh, this is."
That was producer Steven. Yeah. So
Steven was the best.
He had a strong derby. Producer Steven did his first derby with his new wife. She showed up as
well. She's still there.
Yeah,
she's
still hanging around. I like that you said new wife, like it's not the first wife. His new wife.
Well, but I mean, he just got married.
Right.
Right,
his wife.
It's
a different one.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
Yeah, you always just cycle through them. Yeah. Generally,
brand new wife. 2024 edition.
Yeah, it's fair enough. You're getting married in a week.
Well,
and
just 1 week.
Yeah, exactly. So you will have a new wife.
I have a wife.
You currently don't have a wife.
I don't. I have a fiance.
You have a fiance.
And then I'll have a wife.
Right. In 10 days, you will have a wife.
Yep.
That will be new to you.
But I'll say this is my wife. If I say new, she'll probably look at me and be like, oh, there was a previous one.
I'm going to refer to her as your new wife. It's kind of new wife.
I'd like that you're really dying on this hill. I respect that about you.
You're damn right. And just newsflash here. At least we'll see if it gets rescinded. But at the moment, I am going to Connor's wedding.
I'll be there as well.
But I assume at a different table.
I was going to say, I sit you together. I want to make that clear.
I assume Beth and I are like at table two and you're like table 15 or something like that.
My question is, who sits with Lawrence? Yeah. Because it's going to be awkward one way or the other.
Yeah.
Whoever gets left out.
I'm going to tell Bart Scott that you think he's no good at football. I'm just going to just rile people up.
Instigate at the wedding? Yeah. That's a good role. That's a perfect role for you. You do that on the show every year.
Please do that. But anyway, I'm going to get up and make a toast to Connor and his new wife.
I think that'd be great. Can we roll that in as the show open?
Yeah. Fantastic.
That's a good idea. I have no problem with this. I want to make that very clear.
Can't wait. Lawrence made the cut?
Lawrence is there.
Interesting.
Yes.
Interesting.
Made the cut.
Says a lot. What is this?
Yeah,
oh, is this
exactly.
the Wells Fargo Championship?
Yeah,
like,
yeah exactly.
Does the wedding cut.
Qualified?
The wedding cut. Like, just who gets invited and who doesn't.
That's yeah. say a lot.
Lawrence was probably my first friend at NBC.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. Yes. All right, fair
Lawrence,
enough.
Lawrence made the cut, as you would say.
Yeah, okay.
I hope he watches this today.
I'm so tempted now just to go through everyone here to see who's coming and who's not. But then
you should actually tape it like you and Steven did at the Derby.
Right.
On the street, but man at the office. Yeah, are you going to Connor's wedding? They go, he's getting married?
Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly. Yeah, like, producer Damien. Did producer Damien make the cut?
Right, you know. It's going to be
producer Steven. What about Pete? Is backup producer Pete going to be there?
No,
yeah, he's a backup producer. Maybe if he was the primary, right,
exactly.
Would have more of a
right. Does he get? Yeah. Back. Does he like to have to?
They could be like a depth chart.
Yeah. Does backup producer Pete have to sit in a room outside, and then if somebody doesn't show up, he's
bumped.
Like a seat filler.
He gets bumped.
Right.
In.
He gets bumped in.
Right.
He's like Ben DiNucci, who unfortunately just got cut.
Like practice squad call up.
I'm just curious. Like. I kind of want to go through the NBC roster to find out who's going to come and who's not, but then I don't want to offend anyone.
The surprise factor is even better for you, though. You show up and who knows who's
going to
be
there.
Anyone could be there.
That's a good point.
Zach Wilson.
Zach Wilson could be there.
He probably won't.
Todd Zeal, Emmy-stealing Todd Zeal could be there.
If Todd Zeal had lost the Emmy, he would be there, but he's not going to be there.
No, it's some bad blood.
It would be amazing, though, if Todd Zeal was invited and his date was the Emmy.
It would be amazing. It would be amazing if Todd Zeal was at the wedding and then Chris and decided to marry Todd Zeal on the wedding day.
And steals my Emmy and then my wife.
And then your wife.
Can you imagine that?
That'd be
incredible. I'm actually cheering for that.
I probably would leave this.
A mess, but I'm cheering for that.
It's too good a story.
You still have a week, you know, before I can take your names off the list.
Human beings do very strange things. You can't, it's not 0%.
I just like the idea is that if Todd Zeal came and brought the Emmy as his plus one.
Yes.
That would just be amazing.
Then he gets two meals because the Emmy has a seat. So he gets two steaks.
Let me make some calls.
Pretty good deal. All right, we do actually have some stuff to get through today, believe it or not. We're going to get to the Roto-World player news, but before we do that, Matthew, positional ranks starting up on this show for next season. Today we're going to get through the quarterbacks and running backs. Obviously, no better place to start than the quarterbacks as we look at your top 10. And not that different from last year, it feels like. Josh Allen takes the number one spot, Jalen Hurts at 2, Lamar Jackson at 3, Patrick Mahomes at 4, and the top 5 is rounded out. Maybe this is the surprise here, Matthew. Number 5 is Anthony Richardson.
Yeah, I think 5 is where it starts getting interesting. I don't think anyone's going to – like, you wanted to put Lamar over Jalen Hurts because you're worried about the rushing touchdown loss with the addition of Saquon Barkley and the loss of Jason Kelce. How much – because so much of Jalen Hurts' fantasy production last year was on the tush-push on those touchdowns that he gets from then. So if he loses 3, 4, 5 of those over the course of a year, like, that is significant, right? So I think – but most people have those 4 in some sort of order. 5 is where, you know, because you get into Anthony Richardson, who last year, you know, had 20 more fantasy points in every full game he played last year. He only played 2 full games. I mean, right, so he had such a small – he was great, but it was such a small sample size. Now they've added some weapons for him, you know. But, you know, I think that's the question, like, could you see C.J. Stroud over him? Could you see a healthy Joe Burrow over him? I think you could make an argument for Kyler Murray over him. So I think 5 is when it starts getting interesting, and I feel like they're all really bunched up there. But I put Richardson at 5 ultimately because of the upside there. The dude got 38% of his team's red zone rush attempts last year when he was out there. Again, four games. But my feeling is that while, you know, they added Mitchell in the draft, but ultimately, this is still going to be a run-first team where he's going to be the focal point of the offense.
To me, the most interesting guy in that top 4, the tier 1, in a way, is Lamar Jackson, where I feel like Lamar Jackson, despite winning the MVP with 49 out of 50 votes, it feels like he kind of had, fantasy-wise, not a super inspiring season. I think a lot of that, though, is that I think I'm not sure this is correct, but I think the Ravens never trailed by more than 7 points in a game the entire season. So they were just in run scripts the entire year. So you didn't have Lamar Jackson just balling out doing crazy Lamar Jackson games because they never needed him to drop back 40 times and throw. So I think there's some upside there. And even with that, even with the game script in theory working against him a little bit, he was still 3rd among quarterbacks in points per game. Well, he was actually 4th because Joe Flacco was 3rd, which just sears my eyes to see that Joe Flacco was 3rd in fantasy points per game.
The problem with Lamar Jackson is that at the end of the year, the numbers are always going to be there. Like, he's never had less than 20 fantasy points. He's never averaged less than 20 fantasy points per game as a starter in his NFL career. The problem with Lamar Jackson is that ideally, at the quarterback position, you're hoping for a floor. You're hoping for consistency. And Lamar would have these amazing games, and then it would go like 2 weeks where he has like one touchdown pass they're scoring defensive touchdowns. Gus Edwards is getting into the end zone a couple of times, and all of a sudden, like, he's just the inconsistency, sort of the roller coaster of his fantasy production wasn't there, even though the Ravens were just rolling everyone. To your point, they're almost too good from a defensive standpoint and from a run game perspective here. Ultimately, I think you're just sort of betting on talent. His second year in Munkin's system, I don't think the run game is nearly going to be as effective this year as it was last year, losing the guys that they did. I mean, it's Baltimore. It doesn't matter who they stick back there. I mean, you know, the ghost of Melvin Gordon gets back there, and suddenly he's...
They're also just probably not just going to be winning every single game. And they'll still be awesome. They'll still be Baltimore, but just kind of logic and probability would dictate they're not going to be in as commanding positions as frequently, just because, you know, teams don't always win 14 games every year.
And I think there's a very strong argument to be made. They're in the toughest division of football.
Yeah, exactly.
Every, you know, top to bottom, that there's not a bad team in that division.
Yeah. The only thing is Lamar did stay healthy for the whole year, which he doesn't typically do.
Right.
That's true. So, again, like, I'm at three, but I understand, like, wide range of – but ultimately, you know, he's Lamar Jackson, who can win you a week at any given moment.
Matthew, you mentioned Kyler Murray, who comes in at eight, but you said he's a guy that you could even make the argument could jump into the end of that top five. This Arizona roster is finally improving. They have a draft that significantly helps the offense, which in turn should help Kyler Murray this year.
Yeah, and by the way, and also fully healthy. When he came back last year, at least 17 fantasy points in six of the eight games that he returned last year, averaged over 18 fantasy points per game, four straight seasons now as a top 10 fantasy quarterback in terms of points per game. And so I think a year removed, as you see what the Cardinals did, obviously the addition of Marvin Harrison Jr., I do think, you know, another year of Trey McBride. Michael Wilson showed some nice stuff last year as well. I think the offensive line is better than it gets credit for. So ultimately, like, there's an argument to be made that Kyler Murray should be inside the top five. You know, the rushing came back last year as well. That was one of the concerns after the leg injury. Would he look like Kyler Murray? And he did. He looked like Kyler Murray. So ultimately, I think the Cardinals' offense is better than it gets credit for. I think Harrison's just, you know, we've talked about this. Harrison's the best player in this draft this year.
Yeah, and so instant difference maker.
Instant difference
maker. Especially in the red zone.
Yeah.
What do you think, Connor, about Arizona's offensive line?
I think it's obviously ever-improving because now you're getting year two of Paris Johnson. They have added more depth to it even in this draft, and they spent money in free agency on it as well. I don't think it'll be a great unit, but a capable one. Yep. And you have a quarterback that can move. I think they'll use plenty of quick game. The two running backs can catch the ball, which really helps Kyler Murray for some cheap, easy yards. James Conner, Trey Benson are really effective pass catchers. So you look at it, they drafted Tip Ryman in the top 100, which surprised me, but he's a good blocking tight end.
Yeah.
So now you have a key blocking tight end and a pass-catching tight end. It just looks like a well-rounded offense, and it was the furthest thing from that last year.
And don't forget, Greg Dortch, the human Dortch, also.
Never goes away.
Arizona. Never goes away.
No.
Love it. So, yeah, give me some Kyler. By the way, the other thing is that as we talk about, he's kind of the anti-Lamar in the sense that, like, the Cardinals aren't going to be in positive game script a lot. You know, I mean, like, the Cardinals are going to be chasing. They're going to have to be aggressive offensively to keep up. You know, the defense is improving, but that's still a ways to go. It felt like last year a lot of times they played above their heads. They were plucky. You know, they hung in games longer than they had any right to. But the fact of the matter is, it's like, it's a team that's still rebuilding.
Yeah.
And so
they're probably going to be a 7-8 win. I think they'll be okay this year, but they're probably going to be a 7-8 win team, I think.
Jordan Love rounds out the top 10 here, Jay. Odd season for Jordan Love. It felt like a roller coaster at times, and then you blink and he finishes as a top 5 quarterback in fantasy for the stretch of the season. Really different player in the second half of last year.
Yeah, I think back to the first half, particularly those games, I think, against the Raiders and the Lions, where he just looked completely lost out there. And then by the end of the season, I mean, he was a guy who was to your point, like fifth, sixth best quarterback, not just in fantasy, but I think in just real football by the end of the year, the way that he clicked with his weapons. And I think the sneaky thing with Love is that the Packers just had a ton of injuries on offense all season. They had disruption on their offensive line. They had receivers coming in and out. Christian Watson never got any continuity. And now I think just you project more health on average. Also, these rankings, they don't include the fact that Jordan Love, in the first round of the playoffs, completely destroyed the Dallas Cowboys, lit them up as theoretically elite defense. So Jordan Love, he projects, I think, as real life top 7-8 quarterback, and he'll be thereabouts in fantasy too, I think.
That's the thing, is that he was actually producing fantasy points early in the season, but yeah. We were talking about this early in the season, like, it all felt very fluky.
A lot of it was rushing, the touchdowns against New Orleans early on, where
right,
he's letting
like,
him in.
You know, broken plays, yeah. That, like, he underthrows a guy, but then, you know, like, he, you know, whatever.
Jaden
Reed picks
him.
It up and, right. Like, you know, and runs into the end zone, like, has to come back for it. Like, so he did not look like a great NFL quarterback early part of the season, but he was putting up fantasy points. And then somewhere in the middle of the season, it all clicked. And to your point, he looked like a franchise guy. And the game that he, you know, whether it was on the road at Dallas and on the road at San Francisco, like, in the playoffs, like, he looked like, you were like, damn. Wait, hold on. Did Green Bay just get 3 franchise quarterbacks in a row? Yeah. Like, that's, as somebody, you know, who's a Washington fan who's been in the quarterback desert for, you know, almost 3 decades with little spots here and there, you know, going from Favre to Rodgers to now, oh, crap, Jordan Love is, like, a legit great NFL quarterback. I think that's a part of it. They're, coming into the season, there was questions about, obviously, about Jordan Love, but also about the receiving. Could Christian Watson stay healthy? You know, what is Jaden Reed and Dontavian Wicks and these guys? You know, and so the fact is they found something with all these wide receivers. Like, Bo Melton's a nice player, and he can't get on the field for Green Bay.
Not even close.
Right. Yeah. I mean, exactly. But, I mean, I like Melton, and I know a lot of people that really do that think, yeah. You know. So the fact is here's a guy that's going to be the second year as the starter. He comes in knowing, like, he is the guy. All the wide receivers have improved as well. Josh Jacobs, I think, is a net, at worst, equal, and you could argue maybe an upgrade over Aaron Jones in terms of just the durability that Josh Jacobs brings as well to that backfield. So I think the Packers are really interesting this year, but Jordan Love specifically, who last year finished as a top 5 fantasy quarterback, he comes in at 10 for me, but you could certainly obviously see him higher because of the rushing and because of just looking like the guy.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Let's look at 11 through 20. This is where you could obviously find some value in your redraft leagues. Rookie Caleb Williams, the number 1 overall pick in the draft. He comes in there at 11, Matthew. Brock Purdy at 12. Another rookie in Jaden Daniels at 13. We're still waiting on the big Trevor Lawrence breakout as he comes in at 14. 15 is Kirk Cousins. 16, Tua. 17, Jared Goff as we get a stretch run of 3 pure pocket passers right there. Matthew Stafford at 18. Justin Herbert and what we think will be a pretty run-heavy offense at 19, so a big change for Herbert in the rankings. And then Aaron Rodgers coming off the torn Achilles, just like Kirk Cousins, rounds out the top 20 there, Matthew.
What I found is just doing these overall rankings is you see these names that are 11 through 20, right? I mean, you know, Tua was top 10 for a long time last year.
Right, it's kind of
obviously,
jarring,
you know, Kirk Cousins was ridiculous. Brock Purdy as well. We just mentioned, you know, Jordan Love was a top 5 fantasy quarterback last year. I could barely get him inside my top 10. Last year, there was a talk about, like, hey, if you want an elite quarterback, you got to get one early. I don't know that this year that's the case, because I think you would be fine with a lot of the guys on this list as your starting quarterback in a 1 quarterback league, because I can sort of poke small holes in the guys 1 through 10. It's all very narrow. If Brock Purdy finishes as QB6 next year, I'm not going to be shocked, and I have him at 12. I have Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. We expect both those guys. I put Williams slightly over Jaden Daniels just because I like Caleb Williams' weapons better than I do, as much of a homer for Jaden Daniels as I am. Daniels will get you some rushing, but Williams is also mobile as well. Like,
his throwing floor is hot, much higher.
Much higher. You know what I mean? I think there's less chance of injury with Caleb Williams than there is with Jaden Daniels as well, just given the relative size of those two guys. But again, Jaden Daniels is a guy that could finish top 7 easily if he stays healthy all the year and the rushing, you know. So it's just, it is incredibly deep this year in terms of quarterback. Tua, which we're going to talk about. I mean, you know, Tua had moments where he was an elite fantasy quarterback, somewhat inconsistent. He also had, you know, some games where he sort of disappeared, but like.
Tua just has an incredibly high floor because you still have Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, right, and the Mike McDaniel offense. Like, right. It's really just about on health for him producing. I know I don't necessarily disagree with it. It is just very jarring to see a 19 next to Justin Herbert.
I know.
Yeah.
But
his ADP is like, you look at best ball drafts right now, nobody cares about Justin Herbert. It's crazy.
No receivers.
Well, exactly. He's got no receivers. It's a run heavy offense. And by the way, Justin Herbert hasn't been great fantasy wise for the majority of his pro career. It's all been much more about potential than actual fantasy production. He's had some nice moments. He's had, you know, one or two good years, but he's suffered some injuries. And so, you know, unless they're going to use him running wise in a bigger way, I don't think that's going to happen. 8 of the 10 years that Greg Roman has been an offensive coordinator in the NFL, his offenses have ranked 27th or lower in pass attempts per games. And so, like, it's going to be a run-heavy offense. It just is. And that, like, when he does throw, like, he's going to be throwing to Ladd McConkey and Josh, you know, Palmer. And you're sort of like, okay. Like, we love the talent, but it's hard for me to sit here and go, yeah, I want to put him over Matthew Stafford, who, by the way, was a top 9 quarterback over the final 7 games that he played last year and gets everyone back last year with a healthier offensive line, with a better offensive line. Or Kirk Cousins, who is going now to a dome in Atlanta with a Sean McVay disciple calling the plays, you know, and he's got Drake London and Kyle Pitts and Bijan Robinson, and like, there's weapons. It's crazy how deep quarterback is this year.
Yep. To me, the most interesting guy 11 through 20 here is Brock Purdy, in a way where I feel like Purdy's in a weird spot in his career where so he finishes QB6 in fantasy last year. He's minus 250 to win MVP with 2 weeks left in the season, much to my chagrin, before his 0 out of 10 performance on Christmas against Baltimore. And then in the playoffs, he is merely solid. Like, I don't think anyone came out of that playoff run being like, oh, Brock Purdy isn't the guy. He also wasn't amazing. And so now he's just in this weird spot where I don't think there's any reason why he should be worse this coming season, given that, you know, he did deal with, one, his own injuries. It seemed like he played 2 games effectively concussed against Minnesota and Cincinnati. Debo missed some time, but McCaffrey was healthy. Ayuk was healthy. Don't know exactly what the wide receiver room is going to be. Like, are all these guys just, is it just going to be Ayuk, Debo, and Ricky Pearsall?
Pearsall will help in some capacity.
So, yeah. I mean, he's a strange guy to think about. You always just wonder, like, is he just going to turn into a pumpkin at a given moment, Brock Purdy? Like, he was the MVP favorite and minus 250, and people are, at one point, people are like in the middle of the season, like, oh, should Sam Darnold come in for Purdy after he had the games against Minnesota and Cincinnati?
If everything about Brock Purdy was exactly the same, but he'd been drafted at the end of the first round instead of his Mr. Irrelevant, no one's having these conversations. No,
people just look at him as though he's Dak Prescott, basically, where you know that he's not quite Mahomes Allen level, but you know that he's still a top 10 guy.
He was the 6th best quarterback in fantasy last year, 8 different games with 20 or more fantasy points as well, led all quarterbacks in yards per pass attempt, and at least as we sit here today, every single weapon that he had last year is back. So, I mean, you mentioned Debo, you mentioned Ayuk, George Kittle is back, as is Christian McCaffrey. It's still one of the best offensive lines in football. They add Ricky Pearsall, Juwan Jennings, which everyone's just like, whatever, but Juwan Jennings was balling out in the Super Bowl.
Right. He's going to win Super Bowl MVP.
Right. I mean, he should have been, right? You know, he had a shot at it. So my point is like, they're loaded again now. Can Purdy stay healthy, obviously, because he had the bad injury in the NFC Championship 2 years ago? Can Debo and Ayuk and Kittle and all those guys and McCaffrey, it's one of the older teams in the NFL, and they stayed really healthy last year, so can they stay healthy? But you've got one of the best offensive play callers in the NFL calling his plays. It's another year in that system. He's surrounded by as much talent as any quarterback in the NFL. He doesn't run that much, but he's also not a nothing. You know what I mean? Like,
he should run more.
He should really run more, but like, he'll get you, 10 to 15, maybe 20 yards in a game, and so you get an extra point or two here as well. So he comes at a 12 for me, but again, he was QB6 last year. Purdy, again, if that's one of those guys that, like, if we look up a year from now and Purdy was once again a top 6 fantasy quarterback, top 8 fantasy quarterback, no one's going to be shocked, and it was hard for me to get him inside my top 10. So it's just another example of just how deep the quarterback position is this year in fantasy, and I think the margins between those guys are razor thin. Like, we're all wowed by C.J. Stroud. Like, I love C.J. Stroud, right? But at the end of the day, do we think C.J. Stroud's numbers are definitely going to be significantly better than Brock Purdy's a year from now?
So guaranteed.
Like, they're both well-coached with a lot of weapons around them. Again, I get it. C.J. Stroud is all flashy and everything like that, but at the end of the day, Purdy shows up with numbers.
Yep. I mean, I think Stroud is the better, more talented quarterback. Of course. But Purdy has the better offensive. I'm taking Kyle Shanahan over everyone else in the league on the play caller front, and then he's probably still got the best weapons, even though Houston have upgraded. The one thing I'll say about Purdy, someone who's watching every single snap he took because of my MVP ticket on him, he didn't have to play a number of great defenses last year, and when he did, it didn't look great. Against Baltimore and Cleveland, those are the two games he really struggled. He can't play in the rain. That seems like a real thing now. He was dreadful against Cleveland in the rain. He was pretty bad against the Packers in the rain too, and he was largely kept out of the conditions. So those would be the two things with Purdy I'd be a little bit concerned about.
And it's why last year's QB6 is at number 12.
Yeah.
And it's why I do have CJ Stroud at QB5. I agree with everything you just said, but I'm just saying it's not a crazy statement to be like, oh, you know what? Like a year from now, if we said, wow, Brock Purdy ended up putting up better numbers than CJ Stroud last year, I don't think any of us would be like, whoa, where did that come from? That's crazy. You know what I mean? Like that.
Yeah, no. Some of these other guys, still like Tua, Matthew Stafford, they could absolutely be top seven, top eight quarterbacks.
And Trevor Lawrence. Yeah. Let's see if you know.
The offense has more weapons.
The offense
Brian
has
Thomas
more.
Thomas Jr., Gabe Davis. Like, they could throw the ball down the field now a little bit.
1,000%. And, you know, and Doug Peterson, you know, like the turnovers were tough last year, but when I talked to Coach Peterson at the NFL Combine, I was like, how would you rate Trevor's year last year? And he said, I thought it was good, not great. But, like, we know great's in there. Or we assume that great is in there. So
the other thing with Lawrence, too, is that he was hurt, like, basically every single week last year. Like, it was unbelievable. So I didn't think he was going to be out there.
Remember there was, like, a Thursday night game? There was just like, well, he's not playing, and then he shows up in a brace.
Like, he literally had, like, a sprained MCL, and then he's taken off for 30-yard runs against New Orleans. Mm. And he
it
did
was
miss
the Saints game on that Thursday night.
He did miss time at the end of the year for a little bit. He's dealing with, like, concussions, with shoulders, with knees. It just wasn't his year last year.
To put a bow on this, and we're going to talk a lot of draft strategy this summer, but Matthew, my big picture takeaway from your rankings is I think I'd, in one quarterback leagues redraft, I'd rather take two of these guys than one guy early because
For sure.
of all the injuries, the fact that you're basically saying there's a big cluster where there's so much variance, I think I'd rather bet on two of these guys in 11 to 20 than taking one really, really early this year.
Especially because, by the way, like, I could, if he said to me, nitpick your top 10 again. And this is my top 10. These are my rankings. Like, so I'm standing by him. But the fact of the matter is like, we talked about after Josh Allen, proud Fantasy Life investor, by the way, Josh Allen. And by the way, I just want to be clear that I did not rank Josh Allen number one because he's an investor in FantasyLife.com.
It may have been a tiebreaker.
I ranked him number one because he's the best player in fantasy. It just happens to be a benefit that he is also
Joe
a proud Burrow's investor.
Joe Burrow has pulled all his
FantasyLife.com. Joe Burrow also a proud investor of FantasyLife.com. But as you go down the list, right? I mean, again, Jalen Hurts, right? If the rushing touchdowns come away, like, that hurts him. Lamar Jackson, we talked about the inconsistency. Patrick Mahomes was barely a top 10 fantasy quarterback last year. Now, they gave him more weapons, but who knows what's going on with Rashee Rice and limited snaps for Kelsey this year. Richardson, we have such a small sample size from C.J. Stroud. Defensive coordinators that face him this year now have a whole year of tape on him in a way that they didn't last year. Right? Kyler Murray, Joe Burrow, both guys that have suffered major injuries within the last 2 years. And so can they overcome that? Dak Prescott, we think Dak's going to have a huge year because he's just going to have to throw, but, you know, Dak also doesn't run as much anymore. Jordan Love, does that team go more balanced and it's a better team defensively? My point is that you can sort of nitpick each one of those guys in the top 10. I have them in the top 10 for the reason I stand by those rankings, but
I would say with 11 to 20, if I was going to do that strategy of taking two guys, you can pair here, I think, like high variance with high floor. For instance, I think Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, I mean, they're rookies. Like, we just don't know exactly what they're going to be. Whereas guys like Brock Purdy, Tua, Goff, Stafford, if they stay healthy, like, they just have systems and weapons where I just don't think those guys can really be terrible if they stay healthy.
That's right.
So you pair one of the variance guys with a higher floor guy.
Nelly Korda looks to continue her dominance with a 6th straight LPGA Tour victory this week in the Cognizant Founders Cup. Find out if she comes through New Jersey by streaming Peacock Live today through Sunday. All right, as we move over from the quarterbacks to the running backs here, we'll do the top 20 as well as we start with Matthew's top 10. Not much of a surprise who's number one. Good old faithful there. Christian McCaffrey at number one. And then this is where – so these are the fantasy leaders from last year. McCaffrey, obviously the leader at number one, and he will remain, Matthew, in your rankings at number one. But continuing the rankings, a little different from that leaderboard. Breece Hall, number two. Yeah. Bijan Robinson, number three. Jahmyr Gibbs, number four. Saquon Barkley now with the Eagles at number five. Jonathan Taylor at six. Kyren Williams, who we will get to eventually at seven. Josh Jacobs at eight now with the Packers. Travis Etienne, of course, at number nine. Devon Achane at number 10. Matthew, very high on the leaps that both Breece Hall and Bijan Robinson can take this year.
Will Breece Hall be at the wedding, by the way?
Breece Hall will not attend the wedding.
Okay.
I'm sorry to report.
It's too bad.
I was too busy racking up PPR points.
Is that what it is? That makes
Connor
sense.
And Kristen's love.
That's fine. Whatever. He'll be at the next wedding.
Yes. The new wife.
Yeah, the newer wife. Yeah. For sure. But look, I mean, I think this is all fairly standard. Like, we expect Breece Hall, who last year led all running backs in receptions last season, to continue that. We expect Aaron Rodgers to be there. We expect the offense to be better, the offensive line to be better for the Jets. They have more weapons in the passing game. And so even taking the Rodgers over all the quarterbacks they had last year out of it, taking that out of it, just the fact of the matter is that not only do you have to deal with Garrett Wilson, but now you got to deal with Mike Williams. There's other weapons that you're going to have to deal with. Malachi Corley as well. You're going to have to deal with these guys in the passing game for the Jets, where that should open up some underneath stuff for Breece Hall as well, who's such a weapon in the passing game. He comes in at number two. But to me, the most interesting thing here is Bijan Robinson, who gets to play and coached by not Arthur Smith. Mm. That's the most important thing for
him. Doesn't even really matter who his coach is.
No.
It's just not Arthur Smith.
It's not Arthur Smith.
N-A-S.
Yeah, look, he had 12 different games last year with 15 or more touches. Like, he averaged 18.1 fantasy points per game. That would have been running back three over a full season. That 18.1. Seven different games with 18 or more fantasy points. Only three running backs had more. 17% target share, third highest among running backs. And again, that was all with one hand tied behind his back because of Arthur Smith. And so this is going to be a much more efficient offense under Kirk Cousins. It's going to obviously make Bijan Robinson a focal point. Cordarrelle Patterson no longer there to vulture, whatever, 4 to 5 touches a game. Yes, they've got Tyler Algier, but make no mistake, like, Bijan Robinson, with Kirk Cousins, they're going to be in scoring position more often. And even if the touches even come down slightly, and I don't think there's any way they can, because Arthur Smith just used him so sporadically and weirdly, but the fact is that even if you give Bijan Robinson the exact same number of touches as he had last year, the offense is just going to be so much better under Kirk Cousins, and they'll be in scoring position more often, and they'll sustain drives longer, that Bijan Robinson, to me, is an easy pick at number three. And if we're sitting here a year from now talking about how Bijan Robinson had the number one running back in fantasy year last season, a year from now, that wouldn't shock me. That's obviously within the range of outcomes.
Yeah, we spoke about this a few weeks ago, but if I could look ahead into a crystal ball and was able to see one box score from week one of the NFL season to inform decisions about drafting, about betting, it would be how many carries does Bijan Robinson get and how many snaps, what snap percentage does he play? Because if Bijan Robinson is going to be a workhorse back, then he's every chance to, you know, go past Christian McCaffrey and be the best player in fantasy. I think with Breece Hall, too, the sneaky thing there is just that the Jets' offensive line is now seemingly competent.
Totally
whereas
different.
It was not competent last year, and that combined with Aaron Rodgers, and also the fact that, like, his knee, it seems fine if he's going to get 38 carries against the Patriots in Week 18. So Breece Hall, who is, I think, potentially the most talented pure runner in the league, like, it still looks like
he's
Adrian Peterson out there, and with his speed, he was just, the fact that he was able to produce fantasy-wise despite his context last year, like, the sky's the limit for him this year, Connor.
Yeah, it really is. And the fact that, it goes back to your point, Matthew, with Bijan, red zone opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, the Jets were just horrendous in between the 20s last year. Horrendous.
Yes,
and now you expect more red zone opportunity where turn around, hand the ball to Breece Hall with a competent offensive line.
Breece Hall, by the way, 30-1 to an offensive player.
Pretty shocked by that.
Which is a bet that I like. That market should be very correlated to fantasy rankings, and the fact that he's the number two running back, he should be shorter than 30-1.
Especially because, by the way, if the Jets are good this year in the New York market, it's been so long, and if Breece Hall has the kind of season that he's capable of, then yeah, certainly he would be in there, because Offensive Player of the Year is usually a non-quarterback award.
It's become a non-quarterback award. Everyone's just decided this is for running backs and wide receivers and MVPs for quarterbacks. And so Breece Hall, I mean, he should be second among running backs, certainly, for this award. And you could argue that, like, McCaffrey, as good as he was last year, he was, one, he stayed fully healthy, which he doesn't typically do.
Right.
And then secondly, also, he's very dependent on these long runs early in the season, which dried up a little bit. He had the touchdowns. He's not going to score touchdowns every single game like he was for a stretch last year, too. So Breece has as much ceiling as anyone.
Right after Breece and Bijan, number four, Jahmyr Gibbs here, Matthew, where we'll see, I think, you know, David Montgomery will still be a factor in fantasy, but Gibbs is going to have even a bigger impact on this offense in the pass game and run game.
They kept the training wheels purposely on him at the beginning of the year, and then Montgomery goes down, and they're like, well, they were sort of stuck with it. They have to. Lions still one of the better offensive lines in football. Dan Campbell obviously wants to use him. Tough fumble in the playoff game for Jahmyr Gibbs, but really that's literally one of the only knocks you can make about his rookie year. Five different games with 24 or more fantasy points. Only Christian McCaffrey had more, and again, that was kind of in a part-time role. Over 18 fantasy points per game. In games in which Jahmyr Gibbs got 12 touches, he averaged 18.2 fantasy points per game, and so we expect this Lions offense to be even better next year. Again, the fact that Ben Johnson is back helps Jahmyr Gibbs, helps that entire offense, helps that offensive line, and does feel like at this time last year we were talking about Montgomery over Gibbs at cost, but I don't think that's going to be the case here. Yes, Montgomery will be available. I still think Montgomery, by the way, is going to be a value this year because everyone's going to be all in on Jahmyr Gibbs, and rightfully so. But, like, David Montgomery is still going to wind up with double-digit touches every single game and still going to be somebody that they use quite a bit around the goal line. And I think the usage you saw towards the end of the year and in the playoffs where Gibbs would get two touchdowns and Montgomery would get one, or, or Montgomery would get two touchdowns but Gibbs would 2-1 him on the touches, like, I think that's going to be right. And so the explosiveness of Gibbs being able to play over half his games indoors on the turf, I think, is important as well. So we like Montgomery, but this will be Jahmyr Gibbs' backfield next year.
I think the Lions have 14 games indoors again, just with the way the schedule shakes out, just like last year. So amazing for Jared Goff, amazing for their offense, I think, because of what that means for Goff. We'll say with Gibbs, I think that he probably, if David Montgomery stays healthy, he probably doesn't have, like, number one overall player in fantasy type of ceiling the way that Bijan, Breece, and Christian McCaffrey do, and even the way some of these other guys do. Like, I would say that the average outcome, Jahmyr Gibbs is better than Kyren Williams. Kyren Williams might have more of a chance to be the number one overall player in fantasy just because he has more workload kind of upside there, but Gibbs is a safer bet just because of the offense and also the receiving volume.
Yeah, and the other thing is that Jahmyr Gibbs reminds me of somewhat on, not in terms of, from a fantasy perspective, think about Devon Achane last year, and we're going to talk about him in a second here. But Devon Achane was putting up massive fantasy points without massive volume.
Yeah.
I think this is an old school reference, but I think about Jamaal Charles. Jamaal Charles was always an elite fantasy running back, but he never was a guy that got 25 touches a game. Gibbs is so explosive and has such big play potential that I don't think he is volume-based for his fantasy production. He obviously needs some volume, but he's not a guy that, like, if you tell me, like, he's only getting 15 touches a game versus 20 to 22 where some of these other running backs are, that you're like, well, there's no way Gibbs can do anything with 15 touches.
Yep.
Gibbs can do a lot with 15 touches.
So what's the end of the season? He's making plays in the playoffs as well. It's like, is this guy just the best running back in football? Like, he's just like playing a different sport.
Yeah, new age Alvin Kamara kind of stuff with Jahmyr Gibbs. And Matthew, you alluded to this. I mean, the same kind of argument can be made for Devon Achane, who he's never going to be the guy in a backfield. But the question is, does he even have to be a top 10 running back in fantasy?
Not for me. You think about the eight games last year where he just got 10 touches, 10 or more touches. In those eight games, he averaged 22.9 fantasy points per game. Now, some of that's skewed by, like, the crazy Denver game. But in those games, he averaged almost 120 yards from scrimmage. Over 20% of his touches went for 10 or more yards. And so Achane, who now he needs to stay healthy, but given the explosiveness of that offense and the fact that he doesn't need to carry the load because they have Raheem Mostert back, because they have Jeff Wilson Jr. there, right?
I mean, Jalen Wright.
They got Jalen Wright as well. So there's guys in that backfield that are going to help carry the load, but the explosiveness of Achane keeps him as the number one option, I still believe, on one of the best offenses in football.
Yeah, you talk about guys who look like they're playing a different sport. Achane, that 76-yard touchdown against the Giants, where he looks like Usain Bolt in Beijing, like, he is playing a different sport when he's out there. But what do you think about his body, Connor? Do you think he's built to last through these seasons?
That's my biggest concern. I mean, how many running backs sub 190 can do that? The answer is it's very hard to come up with that list. And the question is, can he be explosive enough in the limited role? He probably can. But I think if you're taking Achane pretty early, you need to really take somebody else in that bottom of that Miami depth chart. I would take Jalen Wright because I think Wright is the perfect handcuff for either Mostert or Achane, and you'll be fine because the offense, Mike McDaniel was the architect of Kyle Shanahan's run games for how long? It's translated since he's a head coach at Miami. So I'm just in on the Miami backfield as a whole. Yep. You just need to be prepared the fact that they're all injury prone.
Yep. Sure. And maybe if you take Devon Achane, you want to come back around and get someone like Rashad White, who has a really high floor, to go with Achane's huge variance.
Let's look at rankings 11 through 20 here. And now we get to a lot of familiar workhorse names. Derrick Henry now in Baltimore. Joe Mixon now with the Texans. Isaiah Pacheco at 13. Rashad White, who you just mentioned, Jay, comes in at 14. James Cook at 15. Followed by Kenneth Walker at 16. Alvin Kamara at 17. Aaron Jones now in Minnesota at 18. Ramondre Stevenson, the guy for New England, at 19. And James Conner at 20. We'll get to him because he's got some competition now with Trey Benson in town. But Matthew, Joe Mixon with the Texans, I mean, this is a player that just finds a way to remain in great high passing offenses where he's going to get goal line touches.
It's amazing. I'm sure there's a lot of other running backs who are like, why can't I ever get, these situations where, like, you're the only guy? I get that Damian Pierce is there, but Joe Mixon is somebody who, like, had the craziest 48-hour swing of fantasy value. He went from being the starting running back of the Bengals to that we're going to release him to, like, you know, and who knows if he's getting gigged, to now you're the starting running back of the Houston Texans that, oh, by the way, a little bit later, trade for Stephon Diggs. And now you're a defensive coordinator. You're like, I can either play way back and try to deal with Tank Dell, Stephon Diggs, and Nico Collins coming over the top and give up whatever underneath, or I can load the box and just get burned deep. Like, Joe Mixon is going to see so many empty boxes and so many, like, just, you know, five- and six-man fronts.
And
like
Bobby Sloak wants to run, too.
Yes,
let's not get lost to that. You complained about that all year, Jay.
He runs
way too
much.
You were right.
Yeah. And that's going to be good for Mixon.
Yeah, last year, Houston, top 12 in both yards per game and running back carries as well, to your point about wanting to run the ball and have a balanced offense. So I just think that it's just a perfect situation and that maybe they'll use a little bit of Damian Pierce, but it's clear that, like, they tried with Pierce last year, and he's just – his skill set is not a fit for the kind of offense they want to run. So they go out, they get Mixon. They didn't pay much for him, but, you know, like – Joe Mixon, like, as long as you play in a fantasy league that doesn't count efficiency stats and it's just total counting stats and it's just yards, you know, receptions and touchdowns, Joe Mixon is once again going to be a top 12 fantasy running back this year.
Yep. I think the top two guys in this section, Henry and Mixon, there's a lot of confidence they're going to get the touchdowns. They will be touchdown merchants. It's just whether, and look, these guys are probably going to be around 1,000, 1,100 type of yards, whether they can get the additional volume and efficiency to, you know, vault up into that 1,300, 1,400 yards to go with, you know, 14 touchdowns or whatever.
Not too far after Mixon, Jay, Rashad White at 14th on Matthew's running back rankings. And this is a guy who you could truly say could be a receiving game merchant quite often in the Tampa offense, just with the volume of touches for him.
Yeah, I think he's certainly the most analogous player to Alvin Kamara and what we think of Alvin Kamara as a fantasy star with Rashad White. Now, it was such a slog last year for them to run the ball. It just seemed like they were just getting 3-4 yards a pop each time. The offensive line wasn't amazing last year, but with Rashad White, you just know that he's going to get the volume, so he is an extremely high floor player.
Yeah, this line's going to be a lot better now, by the way, with Grant Barton. That was one of the quietly the best high floor picks of the draft, so that's good for Rashad White.
It is, and, you know, Dave Canales moving on is bad for
that's
Rashad White
point.
Because Canales, like, made a point of, like, we were going to stick with the run game no matter what. 3 yards a carry, we didn't care. It was important, but it feels like they're going to still be running Canales' offense. There's not a ton of running back competition, I feel like. Rashad White proved last year he could be an every down back. The pass catching is what keeps this floor so high, and there's obviously a trust with the fact that Baker is back. They've improved the offensive line. So White comes in as, you know, a guy that just is just a high floor guy because of the amount of volume that we expect him to get.
The next one here on our list, Matthew, at 20, James Conner, is a little bit more tricky because James Conner, as you really said all last summer, like, very underappreciated in fantasy ADP-wise. Now he finally has a legit player that can take some of his carries in Trey Benson.
For sure, but
maybe not immediately.
But I think, if this was a team that was – there's a chance that Trey Benson takes over this job at some point, and make no mistake, James Conner has missed multiple games in every season of his NFL career. So Trey Benson will be the starting running back for the Cardinals at some point this season. I think, but ultimately, James Conner, as a veteran, is somebody who has the trust of the coaching staff, has the trust of Kyler Murray. like, I think people would be surprised to learn this, but he's now had back-to-back years averaging over 17 touches per game. He's one of only four running backs with at least 1,000 yards from scrimmage and 8 touchdowns in each of the past 3 seasons. Like, the floor on James Conner is consistently high. And yes, you'll see some more Benson, but I feel like they kind of, that Arizona at least last year was like, we're sort of just going to, I feel like Benson becomes the third down guy and that it's not a true 50-50 split. As long as James Conner is healthy on what we expect to be an improved Arizona offense, he's going to get points. He's going to get yards. He's going to get touches. He's one of the best goal line finishers in the NFL right now. So I think all the close-in stuff is going to be there. All 3 seasons that he's been in Arizona, he's been a top 15 fantasy running back. He comes in at running back 20 for me. You're going to be in your draft. You're going to be in the middle rounds, and you'd be like, I need a running back. I went wide receiver early, and just James Conner is there. You're not going to enjoy it. No one's going to be like, damn it, I wanted him. No one's, but.
No compliments.
But you're going to wind up. He's going to have 1,000 yards. He's going to have double-digit touchdowns. He's going to provide a value at ADP. Like, he's not sexy at all. And I certainly, his dynasty talk took a big hit when they took Trey Benson. But when you think about last year, they had Amari DiMicardo. And, like, I mean, they had nothing behind
Michael Carter appears at the end of the year.
Yeah, they had nothing behind him. So I felt like Trey Benson will be the starting running back of the Arizona Cardinals sooner rather than later, but not at the start of the year. Yeah. And I think there's a chance that Connor can hold him off for the majority of next year.
Yeah, James Connor's a side of vegetables. It's not a fantastic, really inspiring order, but good for you, and sometimes can be very tasty at the right restaurant. The thing with James Connor, too, is last year, I think he just got better at football last year. He looked more explosive. He finished as the number 4 running back in PFF grade. It just seemed like, and to your point, Matthew, he is an amazing finisher at the goal line. And I think that this team, like, they're not built to win a Super Bowl this year, but I think they are built to, like, contend for a playoff spot. So it's not like it's just a full youth movement in Arizona. So I think that James Conner, he's the type of guy, the profile, that is just destined to outperform his ADP.
DraftKings Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of the NBA, and during the playoffs, new customers could bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Download the app and use promo code Barry when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook,
the crown is yours.
Let's jump into the Roto World player news. For all of your player news, go to NBCSports.com. The Titans signed wide receiver Tyler Boyd. Of course, some familiar coaching faces there now in Tennessee from Boyd's former team of the Bengals. A 1-year contract for Matthew for a player that has been a productive slot receiver for quite some time.
Yeah, and Brian Callahan, of course, the coordinator from Cincinnati, now the head coach at Tennessee, as you alluded to as well. So, you know, kind of a reunite. Hey, he knows the playbook. He knows what we can get out of it. I think this is – you're not drafting Tyler Boyd. You're not. But what I would say is that I think it's another weapon for Will Levis. Like, you know, give the Titans credit, right? You know, they've got Hopkins.
Ridley.
They signed Calvin Ridley to the big deal. They've got Treylon Burks still there. My guy Chigakonkwo, now Tyler Boyd. Like, they're giving Will Levis a shot, right? They improved the offensive. Capable running backs as well. Two good pass-catching running backs in Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears. So they're giving Will Levis more weapons. It'd be an improved offensive line with Brian Callahan's father, Bill, coaching the offensive line, the best offensive line coach in football as well. So they're going to give Will Levis a shot. I think this hurts Treylon Burks and Chigakonkwo. The expectation here is you've got kind of Hopkins and Ridley on the perimeter. Boyd now becomes the slot, probably takes some snaps away from, obviously, from Burks and also potentially Chigakonkwo in terms of target share, like in the middle of the field. So I don't know. You're not drafting Tyler Boyd, but I do think it's a nice sign for the entire Titans offense. And specifically Will Levis.
It does seem like a very kind of Madden franchise mode approach to building the offense, where it's like, oh, let's get Calvin Ridley, and so I'll sign Tony Pollard, and we've got DeAndre Hopkins, and now Tyler Boyd. It's like all these named players. I don't know if it really all fits together or it was great value in terms, particularly with the Ridley deal, but I mean, there's talent there for Will Levis.
Sure. It's weird, though. It is like it's a lot of older names, it feels like, for a team that you think is rebuilding, right? Yeah. So it'd be interesting. But listen, if Levis is any good at all, you know, it's suddenly interesting, right? I mean, because again, like, if Levis is good, having veterans around him certainly helps.
Yeah, they're trying to set a floor. Pass catcher.
Do you think Levis is going to be good?
Define good. Like top 12 quarterback in the NFL? No.
Never?
No.
Okay.
I evaluated him as a top of second round developmental guy. The traits are good. He was very chaotic last year. He's super high variance. I would be surprised if he ended up being that guy. I could see him being middle of the pack where they can win games with him, especially putting veteran talent around him. I thought he had some moments last year.
To be fair to him.
Yeah.
And then he also had some times where he's getting sacked. And it's like, this guy's not the last season.
But also, on like, a bad team, again, like, on, like, exactly, a bad team, I would argue the worst offensive line in football last year. And there was clearly a disconnect between the coaching staff and the front office.
Right.
And
he wasn't put in a great spot.
He wasn't put in a great spot.
I thought he was better than I expected.
Yeah.
I thought he needed even more time, and he's just a competitor. I mean, you see the crazy runs. He tries to jump over people. He's got a big arm. It's just consistency.
He would have dived for the fumble that Cam Newton didn't in the Super Bowl.
If I had to bet my life on one quarterback in history to dive for that ball.
He's a baller.
He's easy to root for. I want him to be good.
Same. I really I've interviewed the guy twice. Love the guy on a personal level. Like, I'm a big Will Levis fan. I am rooting hard for him.
Yes, go Will.
More receiver news. The Dolphins added Odell Beckham onto a one-year contract. Kind of a crowded wide receiver room now, Matthew. Obviously, we know Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle, the staples of this offense. They did draft Malik Washington, who's an intriguing slot in the long term. Braxton Berrios is still there, who they play plenty. Yeah. And now Beckham in some kind of role in Mike McDaniel's pass game.
Odell Beckham Jr. in the city of Miami. What could possibly go wrong? Here's what I think. This is a splashy signing that has very little fantasy impact. There'll be three or four games where Beckham makes an unbelievable play, where he races off to the end zone, and like, it's a big. It makes me feel better about Tua if Tua is my fantasy quarterback, because it's another weapon. Beckham showed flashes last year that he was still the same guy. There were moments in Baltimore where you're like, oh damn, okay, yeah, you know, but. The other thing is, what is it? Is this his fourth NFL team? I believe this is his fourth NFL team now. Fifth, because the Rams. Rams, Ravens, Giants, and Browns, obviously. Yeah. So it's his fifth NFL team. He's, at best, he's the fourth option on offense after the two wide receivers and whoever the running back is, right? Whoever's back there, whether it's Achane or Mostert or Wright, you know, whatever. So... the idea of consistent fantasy value out of Odell Beckham Jr., I think, is, barring an injury to one of the guys ahead of him, I think is not expected. If you want to take a flyer on him late in your best ball draft, great, knock yourself out. But I think this is just, it's a bigger name, and it's another weapon for Mike McDaniel, another toy for him, but like, I think there's not a lot of fantasy impact other than, oh good, another weapon for Tua Tagovailoa. Because, I mean, I would argue, like, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I felt like last year, Jaylen Waddle, fantasy-wise, was super inconsistent. Like, he'd have some great games, and then it would sort of disappear. Right. Like, Tyreek Hill was the only guy that I felt like you could count on, and the running backs, that you could count on week in, week out for big fantasy production. For all of Jaylen Waddle's talent, there were weeks where he just sort of disappeared fantasy-wise.
Yeah, he was dealing with injuries, right? Last year, the rib thing. He came into the season, didn't really seem to hit. Yeah. His stride until the end of the year. It never really happened for Jaylen Waddle. I think he'll be better this year. The one thing with Odell...
But my argument there is just like how many productive wide receivers can happen on a consistent basis in this offense.
Also got my man Jonnu Smith.
I was just going to say, Jonnu Smith is going to find a way to get targets in this offense.
Your man, Durham Smythe, still around?
Yeah, sure. But look, jokes aside about Jonnu Smith, because we used to make fun of him because of the way Arthur Smith
is.
Jonnu Smith is good, and more importantly, he's fast. For a guy that size, he's fast. Like, he fits into what they want to do in Miami in terms of speed. So for a guy like at the tight end position, Jonnu Smith is one of the fastest guys at that position, I would argue, right?
Yeah, they used to give him carries.
Yeah.
In Tennessee, New England. Like, it literally would get him going
against Minnesota, which was like, is that Devlin Achane out there?
Yeah, I think
the one thing, the saving grace with Odell, and I agree, like, I don't think he's really draftable because of his age, the injuries. He's just not going to see the ceiling with snap count or with target share. The one thing with Odell, though, is that I still think he's very good. And he was very good when he was out there with Baltimore. It's just that the usage wasn't there. Like, he's had flashes where he looks like old Odell Beckham,
sure.
but just the lack of... the lack of consistency and the lack of target share is going to make him not very viable. But he'll have a week where he goes for, like, you know, 4 for 91 and then a touchdown, and we'll be talking about him on a Tuesday, and we're like, oh, that's probably not going to sustain unless Tyreek or Waddle get hurt.
Yeah. 2019 is the last time Odell Beckham Jr. had a season with more than 600 receiving yards.
It's half a decade ago.
Yes, it is.
It's quite crazy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, even since then, though, like, he was going to win Super Bowl MVP. Yeah. He looked like the number one receiver on the Ravens for stretches last
year.
Better
NFL player than fantasy player. Yeah. That's what it comes down to. Yeah. All right, two minor moves here, guys. The Chargers add DJ Chark on a one-year deal to that receiver room, Matthew, that definitely has some targets to go around. And the Panthers bring in Rashad Penny to a somewhat lackluster backfield besides the addition of Jonathan Brooks through the draft.
Yeah, I'll start there with Rashad Penny. So,
right.
I mean, I'm nervous about Chuba Hubbard's fantasy value once Jonathan Brooks get going. Like, I'm not convinced Rashad Penny makes this team.
No.
Right? I mean, like,
Miles Sanders is still there.
Right? I mean, he couldn't beat out Miles Sanders in Philadelphia. And
let's try it again.
I mean, real talk for a second, right? So, you know, whatever. I think
almost camp body status.
Yeah, it feels that way with Rashad Penny, more of a bigger name, just because the Seahawks used a first round pick on him way back in the day. In terms of DJ Chark, sure, maybe. Like, I just sort of feel like it's more of a concern for maybe Josh Palmer or Quentin Johnston.
I agree.
Ladd McConkey's going to be their slot guy, right? DJ Chark is a perimeter wide receiver who's going to compete with some of their other perimeter wide receivers. I still would prefer. I do say I've been doing some drafts. Josh Palmer, like, people are sort of leaving him for dead. Like, as much as McConkey's the sexy rookie and everything, like, Josh Palmer's, like, good.
Palmer's definitely the favorite to be the Chargers' number one wide receiver.
Yes.
He's the number one wide receiver for Justin Herbert. Gives you a certain floor.
And he is going after McConkey in the drafts that I've been in so far. So just something to think about there. I think Shark is actually more of a concern if Quentin Johnston doesn't develop. Then I feel like Palmer has his role solidified. McConkey's going to be the slot. And then it's really going to be DJ Chark or Quentin Johnston for third wide receiver on a team that's not going to throw.
Yep. So just quickly on Rashad Penny. Like, what happened to Rashad Penny? Because at the end of 2021, he was the best running back in football for 5 weeks. He was 6.3 yards per carry. And then the following year, he's the starter for Seattle, and he's got the thing with Kenneth Walker at the start of the year. He's 6.1 yards per carry. Then he gets hurt. And now he's just never been seen again. Like, he's in Philadelphia. And we think going into the season, there was a chance that he was going to be the running back for Philadelphia.
Oh, sure.
And he just never got a chance. And so now, like, is he just a write-off? Like, I don't really understand. Like, I get it, he's 28. But, what's the deal with
Dealt with injuries throughout his career.
Always hurt. Yeah. Should never have been a first-round pick, just being quite honest with you. It was one of the more, covering the draft, it was one of the more jaw-dropping first-round picks I've ever covered. And sure, he has games where it's like, oh, that guy should have been a first-round pick, but such flash in the pan.
Okay.
Not a complete running back, right? Like, you can't use him on all three downs. And, I mean, the coaches get to see him all summer and then don't play him out of the gate. It kind of tells you everything you need to know.
Yep.
No, that's fair.
All right, one more note on the Panthers' backfield. The new head coach, Dave Canales, said he hopes to utilize Jonathan Brooks' versatility in the passing game this season. Said he wants to get Brooks in space, using him on the perimeter screens and checkdowns, and an empty package that utilizes running backs. He also added that Brooks' versatility is probably the biggest thing that stood out to him and the coaches throughout the pre-draft process. I don't think this is just coach speak. I thought Brooks was very interesting in the pass game in Texas before he got hurt, because he's got really good acceleration, he's got really good speed, he's got natural hands. And the Panthers, this is the type of player that can help Bryce Young.
Dave Canales last year in Tampa Bay, as we talked about Rashad White.
We just saw it.
They were top 10 in running back receiving yards last year. And you think about, again, trying to simplify the game for Bryce Young, get him some easy completions, get him some yards after the catch. Like, Jonathan Brooks, on a team that doesn't have a ton of explosive talent, Jonathan Brooks is a guy that has explosive talent. Now, will he be there for the start of the season? Who knows? But I agree with Coach Canales. That makes sense, that especially, like, with Bryce Young, getting the ball out of his hands quickly, getting him some easy checkdowns, getting him taking some pressure off Bryce Young. Everything the Panthers are doing this season, this offseason, has been about trying to make sure Bryce Young works, whether it's, you want to call it, resurrecting or, you know, saving him, or just, hey, let's try to get this kid, you know, some, make him work, you know,
give him a chance.
And so improving the offensive line, get you a good running game, get you a coach that is known to help with quarterback reclamation projects. Okay, you trade up into the first round and you get Xavier Leggett to help with the receiving. You get Deontay Johnson from the Steelers, who's a legit wide receiver in the NFL. Like, you know, like, they've given him some pieces now, right?
They drafted Jatavion Sanders.
Jatavion Sanders, the tight end as well from Texas. Same well as well. So like they're giving Bryce Young every opportunity, I think. And I think fantasy-wise, Bryce Young's going to be all right. Bryce Young's, I mean, like, again, resurrected Baker Mayfield last year, resurrected Geno Smith the year before that. Like, I'm Team Canales.
Yeah, I think Carolina, too. Like, it's just a total blank canvas. Like, yeah, you want to say Jonathan Brooks wants to get utilized more in the passing game? Sure. Like, whatever. Like, anything could happen on this
team. Blocking him from that.
The marquee player on this offense right now for skill positions is Deontay Johnson, who had 700 yards and 50 catches last year. Like, anyone can rise up on this team.
Our final bit of news here, guys. Packers offensive coordinator Adam Stenovich said he hopes to play running back Marshawn Lloyd as much as possible. Now, I said the last note on Brooks was not coach speak in my eyes. This one to me is, Jay, they paid Josh Jacobs all this money. I like Marshawn Lloyd. He's a good change of pace runner. But Josh Jacobs is there to be the workhorse of this backfield.
I think Josh Jacobs would have had his pick of teams. He wouldn't have signed up with the Packers to have 50% of the work. Like, I think Josh Jacobs is going to be an 80% type of true workhorse back, of which there are not that many. And yeah, what else are you going to say about Marshawn Lloyd at this point? Yeah. I'm like, oh no, we're not going to give him that much work. Like, he's just
talk. The other thing is if you sort of look below the numbers in terms of Josh Jacobs' contract, the Packers can actually get out of that contract after this year. Yeah. Like, there's a bunch of, like, it's a 4-year deal, and they can bring him back and that kind of stuff. But
so run him into the ground now?
You can run him into the ground now. Is the point is it's like, in, if you feel he's still got more tread on the tires after this year, then you bring him back for another year. But the point is that the way that contract is structured is they can get out of it after this year, and so the expectation is Josh Jacobs, who has been a workhorse throughout his NFL career, who wants the ball, wants to touch it a lot, and you know, at this point, we don't know what Marshawn Lloyd's going to be. We know what Josh Jacobs is. He's one of the best running backs in the NFL. And so Jacobs should get the ball quite a bit.
Yeah, Josh Jacobs just turned 26. Feels like he's like 3 years older than that.
Todd Gurley's last actual real football year was age 26.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable to think about. Yeah. So, yeah, one more thing on Marshawn Lloyd. I mean, I really like the player, right? The change of pace aspect, really explosive runner, can make people miss. Torn ACL in 2020, injuries in 2022 and 2023. Yeah. Never topped 115 carries in college at two different schools.
So Josh Jacobs is safe.
Like, I'm not worried about the volume here. No. I think he could be an effective player. He's not going to eat into Josh Jacobs.
He might eat into A.J. Dillon. If
he
anyone
should.
Was,
twice the player. Three times the player.
Right, exactly. So
poor A.J. Dillon. Yeah. The end of the show.
End of the show.
Hopefully he didn't make it to this point.
A.J. always tunes out after
And we like A.J. Dillon.
Second
A.J. Dillon's a big fantasy football player. He's been in a lot of fantasy football drafts. He embraces the community. We love A.J. Dillon.
He's there to be picked if you want to.
But, you know, it's tough year last year. Like, he got opportunities last year, and it was just like it felt like he was running in mud.
Yeah,
right? I mean, just it looked.
Might be over for AJ.
Yeah, it's tough. Last thing here is, you know, a lot of times on the show, we start off, we say, who drinks free?
Right.
Well, who drinks free? And the fact of the matter is we wanted to wait till the end to tell you that Penn State Blake drinks for free. And we're like, oh, Penn State Blake. Who's Penn State Blake? Penn State Blake often gets thrown under the bus here on the show as well. Penn State Blake, who loves his Phillies, his Eagles. If there's a team in Pennsylvania that's underperformed, Penn State Blake loves them. Make no mistake about it. We're sad to announce that Penn State Blake is leaving us.
Yeah, he's alive.
Come on out here. There he is. He's alive. Here's Penn State Blake.
Yeah, I'm not dead.
He's not dead. We probably would still be not as nice if you're dying, but Penn State, you know.
He's up there.
But you're up there. No, listen, but Penn State Blake, this is your last show with us here at Fantasy Football Happy Hour. It's your last show, I believe, as a member of NBC Sports.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you going? What's going on? Can we talk about this? Are we allowed to?
I don't know.
Should we? You don't want to?
Maybe not.
Anyway.
Better things.
Classic.
Better things.
Very us.
Better things, F you! Penn State Blake was offered an opportunity in the sports betting industry, which is near and dear to his heart. It's an exciting opportunity.
CEO of FantasyLife.com. What an underdog story.
Exactly.
He's now the CEO of Fantasy Life.
Exactly. It was one of when Josh Allen invested, he was just like, listen, I'm doing it.
One request. Board of directors.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, you know, Blake, you've been a good sport. You've been a great member of the team as well. Done a great job in terms of the research here on the show. You're part of the fabric of the show, and we're going to miss you tremendously.
Going to miss you guys, too. Yeah, it's always been a joy. I'd probably say favorite memory was you guys down in Philly, because you guys got to experience the fans down there, especially the Dollaritas, and then seeing you in front of that whatever that Eagles mascot guy was. That was
terrifying.
That was terrifying, entertaining. Yeah. But no, you guys made the show very enjoyable. Everybody behind the scenes as well that I worked with day to day. It's been a pleasure and it's been a run. So
good man, Blake.
Appreciate you guys.
You're best, Blake.
Yeah,
we
wish you all the best. And listen, if you ever need anything at all, just let me know, and I will make Connor do it. So just you let me know. You let me know.
I'm going with him, by the way. I just want to keep it under wraps. Yeah, this is my last show. I'm not going to.
Oh, I will fantasy left.
Yes. I am the chief content officer and marketing officer at fantasylife.com.
The next time you see us, Connor will have a new wife, and we will have a new researcher. But that's music means it's closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. For Jay Crouch, or Connor Rogers, and Penn State Blake Friedman, I'm Matthew Berry. Thank you, Blake.
Thanks, you, Blake.
Peace out.
Peace out.